In a remote village blanketed by winter, a man known only as Kay arrives late one evening. Exhausted from his journey through bitter cold, he gratefully accepts a straw mattress at the local inn, only to be rudely awakened by an officious young man demanding to know why he's staying without the Count's permission. With remarkable composure, Kay announces he is the land surveyor summoned by the castle itself. This claim triggers a midnight telephone call to the mysterious castle looming over the village. The response perfectly captures the maddening nature of authority in this world. First comes an absolute denial of any knowledge of a surveyor, followed shortly by a complete reversal, without explanation or acknowledgement of the contradiction. Morning reveals the castle as disappointingly ordinary, a rather miserable little town of weathered buildings and narrow streets. The castle tower particularly draws Kay's attention, appearing uncertain and irregular, as if drawn by the anxious or careless hand of a child. This visual metaphor brilliantly establishes the central theme, authority simultaneously imposing yet hollow nature. Kay's bold declaration that he wants to be free at all times establishes him as both determined and fundamentally naive, a man who still believes in personal autonomy while already entangled in a system methodically designed to deny it. Kay's meeting with the village chairman reveals bureaucracy at its most absurd. The chairman's office physically embodies administrative chaos, documents blanket half the room in towering stacks, with countless more stored haphazardly in a barn, though much had been lost. This overwhelming paperwork serves as a metaphor for bureaucracy itself. The chairman explains Kay's convoluted situation. A decree ordering preparation for a land surveyor became trapped in the system when the village's response explaining no surveyor was needed disappeared. Department A let the matter fade, while Department B, finding an empty folder, initiated an endless chain of correspondence, each query spawning multiple sub-queries. Most revealing is the authority's operating principle that errors cannot exist within their perfect system. Control agencies exist, but aren't tasked with finding errors, since errors are theoretically impossible. A circular logic mirroring our experiences with bureaucracies, where directives seem to materialize spontaneously rather than from identifiable human sources. Kay's quest shifts when he meets Frida, a blonde barmaid with a gaze of exceptional superiority who claims to be Clam's mistress. Through a peephole, she shows Kay, Clam, an utterly ordinary, medium-sized, fat, ponderous gentleman, despite his mythic status. This voyeuristic moment symbolizes the village's relationship with authority, watching from afar while discovering power's mundane reality. When Kay and Frida spend the night on the beer-soaked taproom floor, their liaison represents both rebellion and compromise. Their earthbound connection contrasts with the castle above. Kay realizes they've betrayed Clam, potentially sabotaging his position while gaining a connection to the castle hierarchy. Their relationship becomes public interest, revealing how personal affairs intertwined with bureaucracy. The landlady, formerly favored by Clam, treats Frida maternally while showing Kay contempt. When Kay announces their marriage plans, she insists on a notary visit, illustrating how institutions insert themselves into intimate connections requiring official approval. Kay's obsession with meeting Clam drives his actions, becoming both quest and metaphor for the futility of seeking direct access to authority. When Kay learns Clam's sleigh waits in the courtyard, he positions himself there to intercept the official, revealing both determination and naivety about bureaucratic power. The coachman's encounter reveals hierarchical complexities. Clam's cognac represents a small concession, yet serves as a trap. Kay's impulsive decision to climb into the sleigh mistakes symbolic proximity for actual access to power. The warmth and cognac create a false intimacy until reality intrudes with sudden illumination and footsteps. The appearance of a young gentleman, explicitly not Clam, encapsulates K's relationship with authority. Power remains perpetually mediated through representatives. K's connection to Clam exists only through proxies, letters he receives but cannot answer, the sleigh he briefly occupies, and Clam's former mistress. How often do we encounter institutions only through their representatives, never reaching the actual decision makers? Amalia's family history reveals defiance's cost in the village. When she received a vulgar letter from a castle official demanding her presence at the gentleman's inn, she tore it up and threw the pieces in the messenger's face, an unprecedented act in this compliant community. Consequences came swiftly. Friends vanished, customers demanded refunds, and business relationships dissolved. Most painfully, the fire company chief reclaimed father's diploma to preserve the association's purity. Punishment manifested through social isolation rather than official sanctions. Villagers withdrew out of fear. Though initially financially stable, the family soon found themselves without work, sitting idle behind closed windows. Even their family name fell into disuse, with people referring to them only as Barnabas after their youngest member. Their reconciliation attempts exposed the system's circular logic. When father complained about poverty, officials claimed the castle couldn't interfere in market matters. When seeking forgiveness, they asked what he needed forgiveness for, since no official complaint existed, revealing how power operates through collective fear rather than direct coercion. With his surveyor position revealed as fiction, Kay receives an unexpected offer, temporary employment as the school janitor. This represents both a compromise and opportunity, a legitimate, if humble, place in village society while awaiting a decision on his case. The position comes with humiliating conditions, cleaning schoolrooms, making repairs, and living in classrooms when not in use. Kay receives free board, but faces a 1-month probation before payment. Kay dismissively calls these the usual commitments, while the teacher insists the position is a favor, not to be pushed. Kay's first day proves disastrous. He breaks into the woodshed, sleeps with Frida on a straw mattress, and awakens to schoolchildren gathered around their bed. When threatened with dismissal, Kay refuses, insisting only the council chairman who appointed him can fire him. The irony? Even in rebellion, Kay appeals to the very system he resents. As the novel progresses, Kay meets minor officials who offer glimpses into the castle's workings without providing access. His encounter with Burgle, a connecting secretary, reveals that nighttime visitors have rare opportunities to bypass the rigid summons system, moments when a secretary might grant requests that could tear apart the official system. This suggests the castle's power depends on maintaining distance, as direct human connection threatens its authority. Yet Kay falls asleep during this revelation, missing the very opportunity being described, embodying his perpetual near-miss situation. The novel breaks off with Kay visiting a cottage where an elderly mother reads by candlelight, simple domesticity contrasting with the castle's complexity. This incomplete ending suits a narrative defined by deferral. In our bureaucratic world, don't we all sometimes feel like Kay, seeking recognition from systems designed to keep us at arm's length? The castle remains visible, yet eternally beyond reach, like meaning we seek from institutions that both invite and repel our participation.